From the KTOO Newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry. Sitka is considering action to limit the growth of short-term rentals in the community. That's based on both a sudden uptick in the number of permit applications this year and the widespread feeling in town that housing is extraordinarily tight. But now, it's more than a feeling. The Alaska Department of Labor's latest monthly report shows Sitka near the top of the list of communities whose housing stock is tied up in short-term rentals, and the available long-term housing is costing Sitkans more than Alaskans who live elsewhere. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
2022 is not the first year that Sitkans have complained about a housing shortage, but it does seem more acute lately. In just the last few days, on a social media page called Sitka Housing Leads, there are five new postings in search of places to live by a tidy non-smoker, by someone hoping for 2 to 3 bedrooms, not more than $1,600 a month, and by someone desperately in search of a place for themselves and a medium lab dog mix through November who is open to anything. There are also some housing units listed, including a 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom apartment for $1,500, which is sure to be snapped up, a nicely remodeled 4-bedroom house, but sorry, no ocean view, for $625,000. And there's a recent listing for a studio apartment for $2,000, but it has no bathroom. The picture shows a birdhouse, a humorous commentary on a situation that's not especially funny if you're one of those who just can't seem to find a place.
This has just been so stressful. There were many times where we were worried and preparing to be possibly homeless in a few months or living out of our car, which I didn't expect.
Ben Kinzer testified before the Sitka Assembly in March of this year when a proposal to freeze short-term rental permits came up. Kinzer and his partner, both fully employed and good jobs, had moved 6 times in 18 months. The Assembly ultimately declined to impose a freeze on short-term rentals and instead is moving toward issuing permits only to residents for rentals at their primary residence, the original idea behind a bed and breakfast. The ordinance appears likely to pass, but members noted the absence of hard data to back up the experiences of those like Kinzer who felt the pinch. That data may have arrived. The September report of the Alaska Department of Labor, called Trends, has extensive research on rentals in the state, and it puts the situation in Sitka in perspective. For example, in the second quarter of this year, April through June, Sitka had 151 vacation rental listings, out of a total housing stock of just over 4,000 units. That's 3.5% of Sitka's available housing in short-term rentals. In Juneau, there's considerably more housing stock, almost 14,000 units, but only 379 short-term listings in the same period. That's about a full percentage point below Sitka. Kodiak falls into the same range as Juneau, 2.5% of housing is short-term, and Ketchikan is even lower at 1.9%. In fact, the only place to top Sitka is the Kenai Peninsula, with a whopping 6.8% of available housing listed as short-term rentals. Where Sitka and Kenai diverge, though, is in the cost of long-term housing. Kenai ranks lowest in the state, with residents spending 22% of their wages to pay an average rent of just over $1,000. Sitkans, on the other hand, are at the top of the list, paying 31% of their wages to pay an average rent that is $350 more than Kenai. The last piece of the housing puzzle in Sitka doesn't quite fit as easily into the scarcity picture. While a lot of Sitka's available housing is tied up in short-term rentals, the vacancy rate for long-term housing is the highest in the state, 7.6%. Gunnar Schultz, the research economist in Juneau who authored the report in Trends, wrote, "Rising costs and waning pandemic supports have increased the burden on tenants. The prices of big budget items such as food and gas have risen substantially over the last year. Meanwhile, eviction moratoriums, stimulus payments, expanded unemployment benefits, and emergency rental assistance have all expired, adding unusual twists to affordability calculations." All of this suggests that housing is dynamic, and what was accurate in the second quarter of this year might not be accurate in the third. Who knows? With a little paint and the right furniture, that birdhouse might be a steal. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
two totem poles bound for Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's Totem Pole Trail in Juneau will be from the carving shed of Ketchikan artists. Renowned Tlingit master carver Nathan Jackson, his son Stephen Jackson, who uses the artist name Jackson Paulus, and four apprentices will be done by year's end. KRBD's Reagan Miller reports.
The smell of cedar fills the carving shed in Saxman. Tourists chatter and snap pictures, watching and listening to master carver Nathan Jackson as he works his craft on a 25-foot log. In another part of the shed, behind closed doors, his son Jackson Paulus has spread out sketches of his own pole, being carved nearby. Both poles are being created for the Totem Pole Trail in Juneau, father working on one and son on the other, with apprentices helping out. Paulus's pole focuses on the Shongukati clan. The pole is topped by the figure of a thunderbird.
Another story on this pole is the House Lord from the Sun Crest. There were wars with Tsimshian people. The Shongukati were decimated.
That tells the story of a mother and daughter who are the last of their clan. To save the clan, the mother marries the son. There's also a spirit bear on the pole.
Who led Kahati, a Shongukati shaman and leader, down a glacier path during the Little Ice Age, which is like 1550 to 1900.
The lower figure on the pole takes inspiration from the history of a military leader named Frederick Schwatka, who led explorations into the Yukon area. Paulus says that the man did not pay a debt he owed, so the clan took his name in military uniform. Carving the pole isn't a job that's being taken lightly.
So the story is kind of given to the carvers, and in some cases it's more set, but a lot of times there's a lot of back and forth between the artist, the carvers, and the oral historians or caretakers of the culture to ensure that that is a piece of art ultimately that is respectful of both those aspirations.
Nathan Jackson's pole symbolizes the Wushkaton clan. The first figure on the pole is an eagle, and the second, a mountain. He says he wasn't quite sure at first why the mountain was to be on the pole, but he learned that the clan would put a pole in the ground over a cache of frozen meat.
And so that was the reason why they actually did a totem pole and put it right there to lay claim to that place where they put the meat so nobody would bother it. And so it was a freezer.
Below the mountain is a shark. Jackson says he thought maybe it was a salmon shark, but it was actually a great white, said to have gone after people in canoes.
He ended up taking the big canoe and towing two small canoes. And the young fellows that were aboard the bigger canoe were crack shot with the bow and arrow. And so they end up, as soon as the shark came up, this number on the canoe, the small canoes, they got it.
Both Jackson's and his son's poles should be done by the end of the year. He says it's been easy working alongside his son. Working with Jackson and Paulus are three apprentices, Took, Christian Dalton, and Norman Natkong. Took has been carving for about 5 years. He is carving the bear's face on Paulus's pole.
Stephen and Nathan Jackson are like, you know, legendary, right? Like, it's an honor.
Norman Natkong used to do presentations at the carving shed and was a member of the Cape Fox Dancers. He didn't take too much interest in carving as a kid.
But as I got about 21, I took more interest, and I started doing little poles here with Nathan, and I've known Nathan my whole life. He comes over, watches the UFC fights and stuff.
He says Jackson asked him to be an apprentice on the pole, and he was surprised but agreed. He says it's been a once-in-a-lifetime chance. Natkong says it hasn't been easy to get where he is when it comes to carving. He says having an ability to draw and perfecting the various tools is key.
Just watching and, you know, I'm just trying to take it all in as much as I can.
Christian Dalton says working at the carving shed with the Jacksons is like coming full circle. Like Natkong, he used to give presentations at the shed and has known the pair his whole life.
It's been fun. It's something I always love to do, and it just doesn't feel like work, you know what I mean? You know how you wake up and you're excited to go to work? It's like that.
Dalton says he thinks the Juneau Pole Trail is a great idea.
And I'm happy that, I guess you should say, that Indigenous people have been working so hard, not just at the totem pole aspect, like I said, but to restore culture.
Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
This is KTOO.